But keep watching. Don't let this television tell y'all vision, man.
This is 94 Feet of Life. First of all, Happy New Year. This is the first episode in 2018. Happy New Year to you and yours. A little bit late, but we on time. It's Big Shot Ron. MJ's in the building. Trav, Jay Ham, and of course, Les. This is going to be 30 minutes of hell. Shout out to Nolan Richardson, 1994 Arkansas National Championship. We're going rapid fire today. We're going to cover a lot of ground because we haven't been here in a while, so we got a lot to get to. But before we get into the proceedings, let's take care of the business at hand. Twitter head, 94FOL Hoops. IG head, 94 Feet of Life. Facebook group, Facebook fan page, 94 Feet of Life. And, of course, the website, 94feetoflife.com. This episode, previous episodes, first, somewhere between Valparaiso and Hyde Park, is my main man, MJ. MJ, what's happening?
We here. Also, happy MLK Day. You can go ahead and go back into the website and check out our show we did for last year. That's a timeless episode in which we pay tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King. For those of us who, you know, I mean, need a reminder, you know what I'm saying, equality is what we ask for, so let's strive to be the best we can be.
Absolutely, absolutely. We are taping this on Martin Luther King Day. You know, so much that that man did for not only just you and I, but everybody. So we always keep that in mind here at 94 Feet of Life. Swinging on down to the south. He's probably somewhere between Orange Mound and Collierville at this point. It's the Bakers, man. Jay Ham, what's happening?
Man, you're doing pretty good with your coordinating these points, too. I'm just here to point that out, man, because I'm like in the Haven right now. And pretty much that's kind of like in between Orange Mound and Collierville. So you pretty much on point. I'm just out making deliveries, man. Ham's homemade cookies, man. Like my man MJ always says, not a damn cookies, y'all. They're pretty damn good. So I'm just out cooking, man. Happy MLK Day to everyone that's out there trying to get myself back home so I can get back in front of this hooping and rock out with you guys like going.
Swinging. Now we go across the state line. So now we into the Mississippi half of the Memphis metropolitan area. It's my man, Trav. Trav, what's happening?
Hey, man, you know what it is, man. 94 Feet of Life. We in here, man. We gonna always be in here, man. On this special Martin Luther King Day, man. On that note, man, let's get this thing going, man. Let's go.
And last but definitely not least, as he's gonna get to take the ball off the backboard and lead the break to start us off, this brother is somewhere in the mountain time zone. So y'all pull out your map, look for the mountain time zone. He's somewhere out there. It's worldwide, Les. Les, what's good? And then, hey, balls in your hands and lead us off.
Just want to say what's up to the people. Happy MLK Day. Less is more, and there's plenty of us here. My first topic is talk about Trey Watch, Mr. Trey Young from the University of Oklahoma. What he is doing right now is amazing, and I'm going to go out and say this. On January 15th, 2018, that Trey Young will be the first pick in the NBA draft because I believe the Orlando Magic will end up with the number one pick and they will do what's best for the franchise and get a franchise point guard along with Oklahoma going to the Final Four. Yeah, I said it.
And let's go right there. To me, Trey Young, and I'm going to swing this over to Myron. To me, I asked this question in the Facebook group. I think he's the biggest star. Didn't say he's the best player. He's the biggest star that college basketball has had in the last 10 years. We may have to go back further than that, but just as a star. Anytime his games are on ESPN, which all of a sudden Oklahoma basketball is on TV a hell of a lot more, it's must-watch TV. MJ, you probably were the first one on the Trey Young bandwagon, probably you and Les combined. Why is he special, and why could Les actually be right in about 4 months?
Well, it's pretty simple. I always say you don't know what type of team you have until you see them lose. Well, you don't know what type of player you have until you see them actually struggle. Against West Virginia, West Virginia made his life a living hell. Yeah, he still ended up with his numbers. But most importantly, the way he was missing, his shots was just a little bit short, a little bit long, and that was against perfect pressure defense. So that goes to show me, you really can't stop this dude. He just missed the shot, even though you played perfectly. And we all know great offense beat great defense, and what Trae Young is able to do with his IQ in addition to his shot and his ball handling and playmaking ability, pause, he's a problem. So you can just look at it. That will translate over to the NBA easily. May take a couple of years, but you're going to see the best out of him to come.
I want to swing this down south because we're going to go Trav, and then Jahan's going to come in with topic number two on this 30 minutes of hell. Trav, what about Trae Young? Talk about what makes him special. What are some of the things that you like about him that you can give some people some insight on into what makes him who he is?
Man, me honestly, it's what you see out of the kid, man. He doesn't force anything. He runs a team like he's supposed to, and you can leave this dude open from 30, 28, 27 feet, he's shooting it. And it's a good shot for him. That team looks for him to do things, and he does it for them. That's just one of the best things I've seen from the guy. I'm going to say it, man. And I've been saying it online, and I've been telling my people around me and everything else, man. To me, dude is the best point guard in the state of Oklahoma, period.
Hold that thought, because we might come back to that later as a topic. Jay, finish up on the Trae Young talk, and then finish up with Trae Young, and then lead us into the next topic.
I make a real sweet, real short tweet on Trae Young, and we saw it pretty much like 30 years ago. Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. It's almost like 2.0, and another.
Little technical difficulties for Ham. You still there? We're going to go ahead and keep the ball moving. Trav, go ahead and bring your topic to the session.
Yes. I'm back. I'm here. So my topic, being that I was on live a couple of days ago, and I brought up two players that can run plays for that, you don't even have to necessarily run plays because they just know how to move without the ball, and they fall in good with the flow of the game. And that was when I seen the 50-pointer from Lou Williams and also seen Klay Thompson. These two guys, they don't have to run plays like that for them. And I want to swing this ball around to each one of you, and as not as a big man, like a power forward or a center, but what guards or shooting forward or small forwards that y'all done seen in the league today that they just, you don't have to run plays for these fellas. You just let them play in the floor of the game. They're going to get there. So, big shot.
That's a great question. I think a lot of times we as a basketball society get caught up in 12-step combos and Euro steps, and sometimes you just need a guy who just knows where to find the back, knows how to find his own shot in the floor again, like you were talking about. The guy right now, and I watched a couple of his games, and he's a rookie. So I think this is kind of high praise. It's Josh Jackson at Phoenix. He's really good at just running the floor, whether he runs to the baseline, whether he pops out on the wing. He's a great runner of the floor, and I think he has a little bit of that Cedric Ceballos action going where I just don't need plays. I'll find mine. So to me, as a rookie, he stands out doing that. MJ, what about you? Guys who get it without needing to get it.
Oh, you got to go with Kyle Kuzma. He get it out the mud. He got a mixture of, a throwback to his game, but also got the modern stretch four things we all know and love and would like to see. Pulled out one of the most unstoppable shots in the history and kind of made it cool for a small forward to do it again, which is the jump hook or the running hook. So he has that in his arsenal. He runs the floor hard every time. He knows how to move without the ball to get a shot. And then next thing you know, you look up, he got 20, 30 points. And you're like, how'd that happen? Yo, Les, tell us what's next.
You took my person. I'm not cool with that. But luckily, I'm in my bag right now. So I'm going to stay on the West Coast. And you guys may think I'm a little crazy for it. But I'd like to say Andre Iguodala. Now, hear me out. We know he's not a big-time prolific scorer, but he can change a game just by moving the ball, just by getting the ball, being in the right spot. Now, he may not score it, but he's going to make the correct pass so someone else can score it. So it's, I don't see as far as when I think of offense, the coach mind is, okay, what are we doing to progress our offensive game and how quick are we scoring? I see Iguodala as someone that he can score if need be in the right spot, but he can also get things for others.
I think we got Jay Ham back on the line. Jay, we're talking about guys who can score without needing the ball. So if you're there, I think you are, who's a guy that you feel like in the league right now can get his without having to have a ball all the time?
that goes back to my poll question that I posted in the group and in a couple of groups the other day. It's Clay Thompson. You know, and this doesn't take a whole lot of much. It's not like he has to do a whole lot of creation from off the dribble and things of that nature. But the spots that he picks, he just needs just a little small crease. You know, his release is quick enough to where he's going to get that off. He's 6'6", so he's going to shoot over the top of a lot of camps. And he handles the ball well enough just to get enough separation, you know, in that regard. And Les actually took mine, too. And I'm not in my bag right now. I'm actually in the car. So I couldn't even, you know, pull out my bag like that on that one. So I just had to peel one layer back, and it just actually took me back to something that I posted last week to really start an argument, you know, more or less in group. But it didn't work the night before, so all good. But I always like Clay for that.
Ham, we stay on you, man. Definitely. Bring out the bag, man. What you talking about?
Yeah, Ham, yeah, right. I know you're in the car, but bring out the bag for us.
Even as I just mentioned Clay, and I started this pretty much as a post the other day, it's about options. And I put the whole thing up with Clay and Reggie Miller. And of course, I knew what the hell I was doing. I knew what I was thinking about. And I knew how these cats were going to answer the question. So the whole thing comes back into play, who's the better player between Clay and Reggie Miller. And these cats are saying, well, Clay was never a first option. This, this, that, and the other. So fucking what? Look, the option thing is like, it makes sense. It does tie in, but the pecking order that these cats use, and then they use it more or less to try to evaluate a lot of cats versus another cat. I'll tell you this much. There's one of the cats who's arguably one of the top 10 greatest players in the history of this league, and he spent the first half of his career as a second option. And he was better than a whole lot of first options. And that's the dude that wore the fro out in L.A., and he was rocking number 8. He was like 17, 18 years old when he had seen. You know, and I can keep going, but for a second, so I got to pass that rock over to my man Trav, since he's right up the street from me.
Yo, Trav, where you at, man?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Nope.
I'm here just like the ball you kids, man. I'm here.
Hey.
So, what we got to stop doing as far as judging and stuff, and it's quite a few people that does it. We got to stop judging as in generations. Just because a generation you think is tough and you think a player coming is tough, you got to really look at this stuff because of the way the game has revolved and evolved now as a day. Hey, man, Clay is better than a lot of these folks. You're right, Ham. You're absolutely right. Clay is better than a lot of these first option folks out here, man. So, I mean, I ain't gonna stay too long on that because that's a whole nother show in general. But we got to stop just looking at it as far as a generation and just really give these folks the consideration and give these guys props because these folks are really doing historical numbers out here these days, man. Watch ball, man. Watch this ball, man.
See, what I think my thing is with the with options is, okay, Reggie Miller was the first option for the Pacers. But would he have been better served to not be the first option? Some guys are put into first option roles because they have to, but that's not really them. And I give you an example of what's going on in Houston right now. Chris Paul has spent the majority of his career basketball in his hand, pounding the ball on the deck. You've got it 60-70% of your possessions. And what has it got, though? Exactly. Now, in Houston, paired up with somebody like James Harden, primetime scorer, primetime ball handler, he looks to me better in Houston than he ever looked with the Clippers. Like, he looked like we're going back to New Orleans, Chris Paul, to me, that this, he played this well. And he had a great season with the Clippers. So sometimes being first option is kind of overrated to me at some point. What do you think, MJ?
Well, and we're going to go back into the history. Make sure you've been watching the game, because as much as we want to talk about Reggie Miller being the first option, Rick Smith was actually the person they was trying to get the ball to. So just want to put that out there to y'all. What he did was he ran around a 7'4" Dutchman, and as soon as he caught it, the simple option was if they trailed him, throw it to Rick Smith, he's going to hit that turnaround jump hook. If they didn't trail him, he get to hit his jump shot. So really the first option on that Indiana Pacers team was to get the ball inside. So, yeah, that's what I think. Just saying.
Childhood memories, man.
That's what you think, man.
I'm picking Klay Thompson over Reggie Miller 7 days out of the week, as well as Reggie Miller's most successful team season is when he wasn't the number one option, is when he had a guy up from Detroit, Michigan, Jalen Rose, came in, became their primary guy to score the basketball. They had Mark Jackson facilitating. Jalen Rose helped Reggie get to the finals, helped him go where he'd never been before, and that's because Jalen was at that – I feel in the year 2000, Jalen Rose was the best player on the Pacers. And they made sure that Jalen Rose got the ball. That was Jalen Rose, probably his best season as a pro as well. So it's a lot to say that. And Klay Thompson, I mean, he's going to go down as arguably one of the top 10 shooters in the, ever as a quote-unquote second option. He's the second option getting Reggie Miller shots. So that's just something I take into account. And shout out to the Duncan Dutchman as well.
Facts. So now it's on me. So let me go ahead and go to my topic. My topic is very simple. It's called Give It Time. You cannot make Thanksgiving dinner in the microwave. Stop writing off these players before their fifth year. And it's a lot of them that we have been writing off. And then we blink and we look up and we're like, oh, dang, he really is good. So I wanted to go around the horn. We'll start with Big Shot. Big Shot, name a player that you think is getting judged real early, unfairly, and nobody's not giving them time.
I mean, this is easy. This is a softball to Ken Griffey Jr. It's Lonzo Ball. This is the if you look at Lonzo Ball's numbers, if you told me at the beginning of this year, 10.7 rebounds, 7 assists, and you don't tell me anything else about his season, I would have took that. He's not a scorer. We all knew that. The beauty of his game is the other things that he does. And, yes, his shooting is horrible. That can be fixed. But to say on January 15, 2018, for somebody that's 20 years old in his rookie season that this is a bust, this is a flop, I'm not with that. So I'll take the easy out is Lonzo. Jay Ham, let me swing this over to you. Who is getting judged way too early?
I'm going to probably have to pivot back one calendar, for a whole season and go back to last year with Jaylen Brown. He'll be in the third overall pick. And of course, when you're that high, when you select it that high, those expectations automatically come with it. And a lot of people put just automatically tag star, you know, when you draft it that high. And you saw his growth and maturation with, amongst, you know, with a relatively young squad last year. The best player was Isaiah Thomas, who, like, you know, 30 years old. He's 5'9", or whatever. I think he's at about 5'7", but whatever the case. And you see the maturation in it now, you know, when he's got Kyrie Irving. And then, of course, there's a couple of articles on the kid. He's a very bright kid. You know, he's a mature for his age. Looks like you mentioned this in one of the posts, like, you know, he went to college and took real classes. You know, so this, he's definitely for that, because it's like the maturity that he's got, you know, just overall, you've seen that jump in his play as well from year one to two. And I didn't think he was bad in year one. You know, so I'm looking forward to seeing this kid continue to grow. Tell him what you got, man.
Man, sometimes I'm about breaking rules. And with breaking rules, we going early, but this guy here is not ready to retire yet, but he still get a lot of judgment. He's a big guy. He's still putting up some good numbers at a team that's just not doing as quite as we thought we would. And I'm going to say it, fellas. We done called the man Big Sad. We done called him all day long. We done called him all types of names. But this dude, he just put up, what, a 20 and 15 game not too long ago the other night? We judged him. We got on him pretty doggone tough in 94 feet of life. We got on him tough. But if we look at this man number for number, we talk about trying to put him in the Hall of Fame real early, if we're talking about early that way. But you look at this man's numbers and look at the production and look at the rim protecting and the rebound this guy has done, Dwight Howard finna mess around being a Hall of Fame. He keep doing this. I'm going Dwight Howard, man.
Flex. Flex, what you got?
This, and this is part of Luke Walton's problem with this second guy that I'm going to say, is Brandon Ingram. Now, Brandon Ingram came to the season. Next KD, and we got to remember, KD was putting up 20-some points as a rookie. I think Brandon Ingram averaged about 8 points last year. And so I think the expectations was high on him, so now people look at him like, oh, he's not this, he's not that. And we got to remember, he's only about 20 years old as well. I don't even think he's 21 yet. And so we look at the Lakers' struggle. You got a rookie point guard with a lot of hype. You got somebody that was deemed the next Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant is arguably, we can have an argument about who is better between him and LeBron. So you put expectations on that. And then you're just young. So I think Brandon Ingram, you give him his fourth year, we're going to start to see what Brandon Ingram really can become, because his body looked like he could play high school basketball right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So he looks like he somebody said, oh, you hoop? Oh, yeah, what high school? Like, if you look at him. And so right now, he doesn't look like a next Kevin Durant guy. He doesn't, not even in the face. He looks like he's still a kid. And so he will mature and progress. And I don't like the Lakers. I'm just putting it out there. But I said, like, you know, I was going to say something about Kuzma earlier. You know, now I'm talking about Brandon. I don't like him. I don't. But I think that they got something special over there. And like my man said, and then stay on topic, patience, time. Let nature take its course.
All day. And I'm just going to end it like this and swing it over to Ron, because I know we got to hit a commercial break real quick. Before y'all get to judging people, I got two words for you. Otto Porter averaged 2.1 points his rookie year. Now he's in his fifth year. He's making $104 million max. We look at DeMar DeRozan having his career year. It's his ninth year. He finally put it all together. He can hit the three, but he don't settle for it. He makes the plays to make everybody else better, and he still scores the ball. We're looking at Andrew Wiggins' fourth year. We're still trying to write him off. he has plenty of time to be able to hit his stride and figure out who he's going to be in this NBA. And now, could he turn into a Gerald Green? Possibly. But all I'm saying is, let's just give it a little time.
And there you have it, folks. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, I'm going to drop my topic. We're going to go into some real rapid fire, and then we're going to close it out. This is 94 Speed of Life.
Feet of Life basketball for the people, by the people.
And we're back. Remember, 94feetoflife.com, this episode, previous episode, Instagram, 94feetoflife, Twitter heads, 94folhoops, Facebook, 94feetoflife, for the fan page and the group. My topic, fellas, is, and then we're going to get into some rapid fire, quick, so be ready. My topic is bias and changing your mind. So I'm going to shoot this back over to MJ and then just swing it around the horn. Are you allowed to change your mind, and how much of a bias do you have toward or against certain players or certain teams? And Exhibit A of this is Oklahoma City. And we, in 94 Feet of Life Facebook group, have, as Trav said about Dwight Howard, we trashed them up and down in 2017. But if you look at where they've progressed, we might need to pull that back a little bit. So maybe not necessarily Oklahoma City, MJ, but at what point do you, as a basketball head, have to say, hold on, my bias is incorrect, or I need to really kind of change my mind on a certain player, a coach, whatever. So give us an example of maybe a time you've done that, and when should you do that?
It's real simple for me. My bias is only towards playing the game, you know what I'm saying, the best and most efficient way possible. The objective is to score more points than the other team. We never had anything against Oklahoma City. In fact, the reason why we're so tough on them is because they have all of the pieces to be able to do what they're supposed to. Russell Westbrook has exactly what he needs to be able to make a run at all of these great teams. It's just sometimes he don't act right. And I can't bet on him to actually do what I think he is capable of doing until he consistently shows what we're starting to see in this stretch. So as far as bias go, I mean, we're wrong. This is about learning. And the beautiful thing about basketball is everything that you think is going to happen when you anticipate can easily not happen because they still got to play the game. So I for one have no problem with being wrong. I have no problems with apologizing when I see a bias and it's different. Just like what we just talked about, giving it time. I think everybody on this panel thought Otto Porter was trash. Now look at him. We get it wrong sometimes. I'm not worried about it. It happens. Ham, what you think?
Yeah, actually, I had one that, you know, I had mentioned the other day on a post where I was talking about Jimmy Butler. You know, and I had made a prediction over the summer that he probably won't be an All-Star this year, given the fact that he's with Wiggins, he's with Towns, this, that, and the other, and he's got the younger guys that are coming up. But he's actually taking that thing by the reins, by the throat. He's playing MVP, you know, MVP caliber basketball through this stretch, you know, on MLK Day, you know, in the season. So, compared to just blew it out there for what it was. Yo, I was wrong about Jim. You know, said Jim laying it down. He putting in the good work. If that prediction didn't come with malice, like, I can't stand Jimmy Butler, I think he overrated. No. It didn't come with no shit like that. It was just more of just the observation of who he's playing with and what potentially could happen. Do I care about being wrong? Absolutely not. I'm a student of the game. This is what I'm here for. But this is also why I never really put kind of those emotions into it. It's just more or less like an observation. If I'm wrong, cool. If I'm right, hey, I still got the receipt for it either way. Either way, it's still a part of the learning process. And it's a lot like, you mentioned it, we throw the word lab around a lot, but it's a lot like being in the science lab. And you just observing things and checking things out and how they move about and change and evolve. So, Fred, what you think, man?
Man, yes. I'm the one that took off back on Dwight Howard. But I'm not taking back off on Oklahoma City. I'm doing it. I'm not doing it. I'm sticking by my guns. If I die by it, hey, I'm not afraid to be wrong. But like I said before, what was my slogan? Somebody say my slogan when I first came off here. It was two and a possible. Now it's straight three. To be honest, I can't even blame, you can't blame Kevin Durant. You can't blame a whole lot of things. But all I'm going to say is this. When your culture is set on when your culture is set on one way to win, and it's still not happening, and out of all the changes, that one person is still there, we may want to look at this Oklahoma City team and be like, hey, something got to give. Either somebody got to buy into it, or somebody got to go, because, like the old saying goes, man, old habits gonna get your ass kicked. They keep reverting back to those old habits.
Les, you got it.
I'm still applying pressure on OKC. I'm with my man Trav. We're applying pressure on them because we're applying pressure. They foot is on their necks, man. They got it. It's Russ the MVP, Mr. Triple Double. You got Melo over there. You got Paul George over there. The whole summer, he ain't got no help. He didn't leave. Well, he signed big money. So I'm applying pressure on OKC, applying pressure on Billy Donovan, Sam Presti. I'm applying pressure. I'm not letting up. And as my man Trav would say, I got time. So when Trav get time and I got time, we got time. Because I'm applying pressure on OKC. I don't want to hear about it. No more excuses. Quit trying to create a narrative for Russell Westbrook when, like it was stated before, Trae Young is the best point guard in Oklahoma. So I think I firmly stand by that, and I'm applying pressure on OKC, period.
I ain't making up out there, either. I'm with y'all, too.
No, I don't think you guys have to let up off, but I think we have to acknowledge certain things when they happen. And the one thing that Oklahoma City has done over the last 6 weeks, so we here, no, the offense still has its bumps and bruises. For a lot of that is on Russell Westbrook. But what's not up for debate is they rebound the hell out of the ball. They defend the hell out of it. And athletically, even on them nights where this offense is struggling, they play really hard. And the one thing I would give Oklahoma City for all the mess, is there are very few NBA teams who you can say will play hard most nights or play hard the vast majority of night. And them dudes play really hard. So while I'm not in the Russell Westbrook fan club either, I respect the fact that him, George, Robinson, them dudes go out there and play really hard on a lot of nights where they don't have to. So I think, yes, put the pressure on them. But I think sometimes you have to acknowledge when somebody does something or makes a change and they stop taking that bad offense on the other end of the floor. So I will give them that. Now,
one thing on Oklahoma City. Let's also acknowledge the fact that they did fix the one thing that they really need to fix, which is Andre Robinson not starting and Terrence Ferguson, who is at least a better wing option from a perimeter, is now playing. And Steven Adams is much better than we thought he was going to be. So let's not just think that they just figured it out. That Andre Robinson injury actually was a blessing in disguise. So.
Thanks.
All right, so rapid fire, I'm going to say the question. So here's how this is going to go. I'm going to say the question. I'm going to point to you. Figuratively point to you, answer the question. Then it's your turn to ask a question to the next man. We're gonna see how many rotations this ball is gonna go through. We all about ball movement here on 94 Feet of Life. So first question is gonna go to Mr. Jahan. Jahan, yes or no? You are okay with Marc Gasol getting traded at the deadline?
Hell no. Get his balls back, man. Yeah, that's the only way. Yeah, I can go, just leave it at that, you know, because I'm not really with the assets and things of that nature, you know, because you really just don't know. But like I said, if it's bags or my man Trae Young, like Worldwide Les mentioned earlier, cool. let's swing this over. Can I hit both of them? Since both of them are Kentucky fans, can I hit both of them at once and just ask both Les and Trav? Y'all getting the Final Four this year, or y'all gonna make it past first weekend? Just curious.
We're not getting past the first weekend.
Dang.
I'm telling you that right now. The point guard play is putrid. That's all I got to leave it at that.
Do it in March.
I probably got to go in the dictionary and look that word up there. That was real Stephen A. Smith right there. I think we may get past the first round, but that second round gonna be tough for Kentucky, man. I got a question though. And I'm gonna shoot this over to the lefty, man, because that's all he gonna do is shoot on the right side. When shooting the rock, what's most important? Is it the confidence or is it the persona that you have? What would you carry over if when you're shooting the rock? Is it the persona? Is it your bravado about yourself, or is your confidence?
I got to say confidence, because if you are confident in your form, if you're comfortable with, you know what I'm saying, the work that you put in, you know the next shot, the best shot. So that's pretty much what it is. So I definitely will say it's the confidence in it. So, and I'm going to go ahead and shoot this one back over to Big Shot. Illest street ball player you have ever seen with your own two eyes in a pickup game.
Illest street ball player I've seen. I would say I'll go to N1 and rest in peace to him. Alamo, to me, was the only dude on N1 who had real NBA game. Like,
yes,
yeah, it's cool, high sauce with the tricks, and that's great. Alamo had real NBA game. He about 6'7", with a serious handle, passing the rock. I saw them play outside at 63rd and Hayes in Chicago, and it looked like man versus children. So to me, Alamo, rest in peace, to me, is the best purely street ball dude I've ever seen play.
So Lamar Odom to me. That's my best street ball player also, Big Shot. He's so Lamar Odom to me, man. Big, tall, handle rock, can do whatever you want to do with it, man.
He had this swag about him too, you know what I'm saying? Like, kind of like how when you see Lamar, go back to Lamar like at Rhode Island. You know what I'm saying? You catch Lamar out in the open floor, he's just pushing the rock up, 16. You know what I'm saying? Just like it was magic like, but it was like New York City magic like. You know what I'm saying? In that way, where you knew that it was true New York style. But the flair and the flash that he had with it, and just the groove, it was just, man, it was smooth as hell. That made me, you know, a fan of Lamar even back then. You know, he was coming out of high school and whatnot. But definitely a similarity with Alamo on that one. I definitely would agree.
Let me say this. Alamo played like he was supposed to play in the league. That's how he carried himself.
Yeah.
Carried himself like, I'm supposed to be in the NBA. I'm an NBA player. So this is what I'm going to do to you because I'm supposed to be there. This and one, I'm going to get this check. But I'm going to let you know that I play real basketball, and I can take you out and put them handles on you and make you look like a fool. But I'm going to let you know that I'm a real basketball player. And Alimo and AO, those two, after that, nobody's touching them. They had a whole nother level as far as street ballers that could play in the league. AO and Alimo, that right there. Alimo number one, AO a close second.
Yeah, that was about, 6'2", 6'3", and he just had this guard skill, you know what I'm saying, get after it, hungry, you know what I'm saying, in that way. And not so much that he just shot the ball well, dude, he just played the game, you know what I'm saying, and his intention and his tenacity he got after it in that way, where I always thought he was one of those that could have probably got a shot at the real crack in the league, too.
And there you have it.
Great discussion.
And there you have it, folks. That was about 35 minutes of hell. So y'all got 5 extra minutes of flame from us on this one. Remember, 94feetoflife.com. This episode, previous episodes, follow all the social media platforms, Facebook heads. Tell your other Facebook friends to join the group, 94feetoflife.com. Join the fan page, Twitter heads, you know where to find us. Instagram heads, you know where to find us. It's Trav, it's Jay, it's Les, it's MJ, and of course, it's Big Shot. This is 94 Feet of Life, signing out.